So I don't like a luncheon. Yeah.
So note to self, Harriet needs a luncheon shout into the void. Good, yeah.
Welcome to the Media Week podcast, the podcast made for media people by media people. Don't worry, we're not your CEOs just yet. We're your common media folk in the weeds of the day-to-day. Each episode, we'll share our opinions on hot topics in the media world, along with some bants to keep you going on a Friday afternoon. So who's in the room? It's me, your host, Harriet from Publicis, Jack from Craft.
Howdy, howdy, howdy.
Charlie from Cho Heroes.
Guten Tag.
Who has a dog named Guinness. And Buki from Wavemaker.
Hello.
In today's episode, we discuss how to work with media owners in the modern media age. Are lunch and learns really a thing anymore? But first... In the CTV landscape, Teads and LG Ads extend their CTV advertising partnership across Europe and APAC. The partnership initially launched in Europe in 2023. As most of you know, LG Ad Solutions is a global leader in the CTV landscape, and Teads is furthering its quality advertiser reach on the largest screen in consumers' homes. How will this shape the CTV industry moving forward? Well, I'm glad you've got a lot to say about that.
I'm looking at the CTV.
I was just going to say, good for them. Good for them. Well done, Teeth. Nothing more to say on that, thank you.
I'm sorry. I was just like, yeah, Charlie's going to have loads to say on this.
Thinking about it, because obviously Teeds, initially they were video programming, everything like that. It just seems like they're kind of getting back to their roots a little bit, making sure they've got the TV section covered and smashing it. So it just seems like a smart partnership for me.
Absolutely. And am I right in saying that also covers the like native display on there, the little tiles? So it's not just video.
Probably.
Yeah, there's quite a lot of sort of furor about there, isn't there? So I was looking, there's like about 7 million Reddit threads saying, I've just spent £2,000 on my TV. I don't want to open it up and see tiles of Alexa ads and all sorts of things. So
I'm so sorry, but the content doesn't come just free just because the TV was £2,000.
I'm with you. I mean, what? You know, you see an ad on your normal TV, in inverted commas, that's still on your TV, isn't it?
Oh, I'm wearing a £3,000 coat. Why should I see out of home? That doesn't make sense.
That's not... Is that the same thing?
Fine. I've got £3,000 glasses. Why am I seeing out of home ads?
I mean, if you bought the like Apple Vision Pro and they started spamming you with ads on that, you'd be annoyed, wouldn't you?
No. Ooh,
right to the eyeballs. That would be quite aggressive, wouldn't
it? But the thing about like being on the telly, it's like, you get ads on your TV anyway. Like, that's where you see a lot of advertising.
I think
people need to get over themselves.
Yeah, I think the biggest thing is people weren't used to it, and now it's there, and it's changed, and I'm aware of it. Like, we're all used to seeing ads on TV in the run-of-the-mill ads, but it's different, and it's new, and I'm aware of it.
Yeah.
In the app world, Yahoo is reportedly buying Artifact, the personalised social news aggregator app built by Instagram founders that uses recommender systems to suggest articles. New sites will be implemented with Artifact's AI features to boost personalised content.
They sunset it, the guys who started it, because they didn't find a sort of commercial opportunity there. But then I think Yahoo picked it up and acquired it from them as, we can now just shoehorn it into what we're doing already, so... Good on them, I suppose.
So Artifact isn't something that you download as like an app to yourself. It's like a piece of tech that helps make that people see the right news for them.
See.
Yahoo isn't owned by Microsoft or anything, is it?
No, they got bought by a big Apollo something.
I wonder, just based on Charlie, your former update around the data center, whether this is, acquiring a load of tech to help them expand that.
I feel like with stuff like that, though, isn't it going to be quite hamstrung from the start because the social sites don't necessarily want you being sort of pulled away into other sort of news platforms? They just want to keep you on their platform. So if you've got something that's trying to, do a better job of getting people away from the site by giving them more relevant links, then the social sites are probably going to try and keep that down.
Yeah, I think so. But I think the pull for this is that if people start their journey on, the Yahoo websites and stuff like that, then they will be able to continue their journey in a more in a way that works best for them and the kind of content that they want to see. So I do think that it's the right move. I do believe that Yahoo in some way is connected to Microsoft.
No, so they were bought by 90% of the shares are Apollo Asset Management, 10% is Verizon.
Okay. Okay, I need to have a bit of a deeper dive into the way that they work then with the kind of like the Xbox sales and the Yahoo kind of creative studio, because I thought that had some sort of dotted line into Microsoft.
Oh, okay, interesting.
I guess in a nutshell, though, what this is saying is that companies are buying up more AI software to drive revenue and boost personalized content, which isn't a new thing. We're just seeing it more and more across the industry. We obviously spoke about Google in the previous episode. Obviously, Yahoo is another, and we'll continue to hear more about it. In social news, according to latest reports, TikTok is inspiring users to pursue new careers by launching a dedicated science, technology, engineering and mathematics feed on the app. Will we see more industries safeguard their future by enticing future talent on the app?
So as a self-professed sort of science guy, I think it's a very good idea. I think a lot of the content on TikTok at the moment is not necessarily educational. And I think it's great that they're taking steps to actually add some real value.
It is a good thing, but it's funny, like, I guess, like, there's a lot of media and advertising content on TikTok as well, because I guess because it's just sort of the sort of free market of it just sort of proliferates things that are in demand. So I guess there's probably already like quite a lot of science and maths type STEM talk. There you go.
That's how this has come about, because there's already a lot of content and they've been gaining significant followers. I think for me, this is interesting because we're going to see the likes of TikTok provide young people and people that will join whatever industry with more kind of informative content about their careers. So maybe we might see TikTok expand into more of a LinkedIn type platform. Oof. which could happen. I'm not saying it will now, but it may, as users grow and get older and use it in a different way to what they're using now.
That's a very interesting concept, I think, about, you know, we might not see those people on LinkedIn, but we might see TikTok kind of morph a little bit. But to your point about lots of other industries, I think one that I'm seeing a lot of on my For You pages and stuff like that is that builders and like laborers and like plumbers and stuff like that. I'm like, even on the way here, I watched a whole video of a guy who was literally like, right, if I lay bricks, it's 75p per brick. And he said how many bricks he was able to lay in like 2 hours. And he's like, I've just made like £468 in 2 hours. And I was like, interesting.
Thinking of retraining as a trainer.
I might get a little apprenticeship or something, but it could be very interesting. So I think, yeah, you're right. The other industries and other areas probably will take to the platform just to safeguard their futures.
Yeah, like using it as a recruitment tool is quite, you know, it's quite interesting. You could, in the same way you can use it to sell things, you can sell your jobs to people.
In social news, or other social news, as reported in Campaign, Snapchat is making augmented reality ads more accessible and easier to create for businesses. Advertisers will be able to upload existing assets and build filters from existing templates.
Ooh, that's good. It's the sort of thing that just makes people more likely to do it, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Half the battle of getting anything like that across the line is people going, oh, it's a nice idea, but that's, you know, it's going to take time and effort.
Yeah.
So if you can eliminate that by just allowing people to use the stuff they've already got.
Seems a bit late in the day, to be honest. I mean, come on.
I was trying to be supportive.
Filters aren't new. Like, and finally they've created a template. Well done. Well done.
I was trying to be supportive.
You're not wrong, though. I will give you that. You're not wrong.
I mean, yeah.
They are fun, though. I like playing with them. Yeah. Whenever I do find myself on
Snapchat.
Snapchat
a lot?
No, not frequently.
I don't think I've been on Snapchat since about 2015.
Yeah, used to absolutely, because it came out when we were youthful in university.
I was still at university. Yeah.
Are we not youthful anymore?
Yeah.
We're not at university anymore.
We are very youthful.
It's full of youths.
In programmatic news, as of April 2024, DV360 will be one of the first DSPs to integrate with Disney's real-time ad exchange named Drax. Ooh. This means that Disney will have a direct integration with the industry's largest DSP. The Trade Desk is also a Drax direct launch partner. The action will reportedly unify access to streaming inventory across Hulu and Disney Plus for advertisers. But what are the other benefits to advertisers?
I mean, firstly, Drax sounds like a Disney villain.
Yeah. I think it is. It's from a Guardians of the Galaxy or something.
Is it?
I think so, yeah.
You be knowing stuff.
He just knows so much, doesn't he?
I actually think this is a sick idea because I think we've been speaking about, you know, ad tiers on different platforms, whether that's Prime Video, whether that's Netflix. And all the time, I think one of the things we've spoken about is that how to activate all of this. Do you know anyone who's activated? Do you, like, it's a lot of direct buys. Whereas I think being able to plug straight into DV360 is a really, really smart move from Disney. Firstly, we're going to get a lot more diversity of ads. I think if anyone's watched ads on CTV or any of these platforms, they can get a bit repetitive. I know Jack's going to say something about frequency, but they can get very, very repetitive. And I find myself getting annoyed when I see the same Premier Inn or Airbnb advert over and over and over again. But I think being able to plug into this, much more people will have access to the inventory past just the direct buys.
I'm not actually going to say something about frequency, no? But the fact that you remembered it showed that the frequency works. Because I kept saying it and now you remember it. No, but my concern with that is, like, what quality controls are they going to put in place? Because, like, you know how, like, for most people watching Disney Plus, especially on the kind of big screen in the living room at home, they're going to be expecting a certain quality of advert that they would get through Clearcast approved ads that you might see on, like, on the likes of All4 or ITVX.
Yeah.
There's going to need to be at some point in the near future some sort of quality check, especially if you get any Tom, Dick and Harry putting their video up. You know, you could end up with some real sort of, like,
you buy one, you get one free.
Yeah, so, yes.
I said you buy one, you get one free.
I mean, that's a quality ad.
Such
but,
a good
I
ad.
Mean, like, it will all be a bit sort of, you know, dodgy internet AI generated, like, video stuff, which, you know, it's going to sort of flood everything.
Yeah, it's got to fit the environment, doesn't it? It's on a big screen. We have big expectations of things that we see on a big screen, more so than we do elsewhere. So I'm with you on that.
What other benefits to advertisers? Fundamentally, it will streamline workflow systems through the use of technology such as clean rooms. And for those of you that would like a formal definition of a clean room, a piece of software that allows brands and advertisers to run targeted advertising campaigns, applying frequency capping, measure and report on the performance of the campaign, and run attribution all in a privacy-friendly way.
Damn, learn something new every day.
Yeah, I'm going to have to do some work on clean rooms because, wow.
On to our main topic, media owners. Now, in this modern media age, we are not in the office 5 days a week. Neither are we having media owner meetings every day. So how do we actually work with media owners in this new age? Things like lunch and learns may be a thing of the past, but are they? Aren't they? Mm-hmm. Are in-person meetings with media owners not a thing as much anymore? Want to get your views.
I mean, as a media owner, I think lunch and learns tend to be quite distracting. So I prefer to go for a learn then lunch. You nice. Come in, you do your little thing, you take people for lunch. I feel that's much better received. I mean, what's your kind of opinion on lunch and learns?
Because it's interesting. Because I was, because I basically facilitated a lunch and learn recently. And I do prefer them. I kind of feel like, in terms of the structure, I would like a lunch and learn where someone comes in, there's some lunch, do some wider learning, and then maybe they find the right contacts to then have those kind of smaller one-to-one sessions that are about, you know, clients' problems and needs and everything like that. However, what jarred me to no end was how can 75 people click accept on the lunch and learn and then, like, 15 people turn up? That absolutely drives me insane. Just click decline if you're not going.
That's a tale as old as time, though. People have been saying, I'll come along to your media owner meeting and then shirking it at the last minute for a while. I think, like, it feels as though a lot of this stuff has recovered from where it got to during the pandemic, because, like, pandemic times being a media owner must have been really tricky because, you know, you rely on those kind of in-person relationships. And I don't care what people say, you can't build the same rapport over a screen with someone that you can do by spending time with them in person. I mean, I always speak from, like, a planner's perspective, but media owner meetings are one of the things that gets sort of quickly scrubbed off of the to-do list when things get really, really busy.
Yep.
And I think when planners don't go and meet media owners and maintain those relationships, they really struggle to know what's going on, like on the actual media side of it, and rather than just sort of having this kind of broad brush understanding of stuff. But people, when they negate it to just, oh, you're just going for lunch, it's like, no, because during that lunch, you're going to be talking about things that are important and that matter. So you can learn why you have lunch.
I think that also addresses another question as well, because you've mentioned planners, but actually who should be going to those meetings with media owners these days? Obviously the industry is huge. It's cross capability. You've got people in network agencies that aren't close to the planning, and a lot more kind of focused on kind of the operational side of things or the data and analytics side of things.
Yeah.
And there's a question around who should be involved in those lunch and learns and meetings. In my mind, I don't think it is just a planning capability area. I think everyone should have some form of like basic knowledge on the partners in the industry, and it should be considered a thing that others learn about. But I'm interested to hear from you, Charlie, about this primarily because you're selling ultimately. You want to go to the people that are going to be putting you on the plan.
He wants the IO.
But you also need the awareness and exposure across the business. So how do you approach that?
Yeah, it's one of the most important parts of the job, I suppose, right? Is how do you effectively turn one interaction into a business transaction and hopefully ongoing ones? And I think with, as you said, some of the bigger agencies, there are just so many different people you could potentially speak to, right? You've got account teams, you've got AV, you've got digital, you've got planning, you've got strategy, you've got programmatic teams, you've got senior people. So with any one single brand, there's a whole web of people. And then you times that by the number of brands under that you look at and times that by the number of agencies. And suddenly you have a really quite daunting task at times. In terms of trying to turn that initial conversation, Jack, as you were alluding to, any initial presentation, I won't do it over Zoom or whatever thing you use, because what's happened, and I think over the pandemic, is you started to get little black squares, right? And there is nothing more A, demoralizing, and B, unhelpful than presenting to, you know, six people who've got their camera off.
I think I personally think that's quite respect. I think that's quite rude, especially if you're having like an intro call. I don't think that is on to have your camera off for an intro call. If you're having an internal status with like your team and it's Monday morning and you're like, just, you know what, we're not going to have the cameras on, but if you're meeting, like you say, a media owner for the first time or a partner for the first time, or even subsequent times, I think camera should be on.
So yeah, absolutely. And for that reason, you know, I won't do an intro call or where possible. I'll come into the office. And I think sitting in a room of people, you can see who's getting it. You can see who's not getting it. You know when you, okay, maybe I need to sort of dig a little bit deeper into that. You also have one of, you know, when you start a presentation, one of the things, you know, try and get people talking as soon as possible. And then you break that barrier. People then can ask questions early doors. That's really hard to do on a Zoom call. So yeah, super, super important to get in there, get in front of people. And then subsequent calls you can do, you know, if it's a PCA or something like that, then it's fine. You can do that over. You need to capture attention first. And it's really, really difficult to do over Zoom.
Are you finding any difference between the different generations? So like, are you finding that when you say, oh, I'd like to come into the office and do a call, is it millennials and up are like, yeah, calm? What are Gen Zs doing? We don't have any Gen Alphas yet in the workforce, do we? No, they're too young. Are you finding a difference, or is it the same across the board?
I think generally it all depends on the team, right? And it's usually led by someone, not necessarily the most senior person, but generally your sort of your point of contact there. And then the younger people will follow suit. So far, I mean, those people, are not quite at an elevated level yet. We'll see. But I think that the truths of business stand the test of time. And that is, being in a room with someone is far superior to being on a call. When you're trying to build a relationship and when you're trying to get an understanding, and when you don't know that person, how they work and what are they likely to understand, what are they definitely going to need filling in the gaps with?
Yeah. Well, just going back to the kind of original lunch and learn piece, I am actually anti lunch and learn. And the reason being is because, first of all, lunch is the only time when you actually get a bit of thinking time. And most of the time, that isn't even 30 minutes. And so to have an opportunity taken away to be able to decompress and get your mind in just a bit of zen before the next 7 hours, 4 hours, 5 hours worth of calls, I find that time precious. And if I want to engage with a media owner or I want to be in that room, I want to give them my time and attention to be able to listen and actively be interested. So I don't like a lunch and learn.
So note to self, Harriet needs a lunch and shout into the void.
Secondly, obviously people are busy, and as Bookie quite rightly said, when you've got 75 people accept and 15 people turn up, that's probably because a lot of people are doing what I've just said, which is they've been overwhelmed with however many meetings and however many outputs, and they just can't face that additional meeting in the day that doesn't give them any downtime.
I'd like a decline, though, in that case.
And I think, there is fundamentally a point of being respectful to the person that's made an effort to come in to, you know, bring the lunch or whatever, but also just appreciating that it takes also a lot of organisation from the individual who's facilitated that meeting. But yeah, I think that is not necessarily a new problem. I think this is always going to be the case with agencies. As Jack said, that's almost the first thing to be crossed off the list. But I think there should be expectations set by agencies, senior people in agencies, especially with new or younger members of staff, as to what the etiquette is when it comes to this, and how you should be in a meeting as well.
It's absolutely like to your point about like the people who are leading the team. If you're leading the team, it's up to you to set that and make sure that if you've been out for lunch, you send a thank you email and you remind your team to do the same thing. Because if you go get taken out, say thank you, otherwise you're a dick.
Yeah.
Like fundamentally.
Straight up.
You know, all of those sorts of things that like the way that you would treat your friends or whatever, it's like that applies to other people as well. So, but yeah, people will forget that sort of stuff. And you know, don't be ordering the Wagyu steak if you're not following suit.
I
don't
even rate Wagyu steak like that, you know. Pardon? Everyone seems to love it, but
it's probably not real Wagyu. That's why.
it's just Kobe.
But moving back onto, but yeah, I mean, I think I can't control that kind of thing, right? So from my perspective, I can't control what happens inside the agency. So I have to be quite stoic about it. Mm. And I have to focus on the things I can control. So setting up a meeting with an agency that you don't know very well and inviting 50 people, don't expect them all to turn up. In which case, it's all about value. Like, what value are you offering? It's much easier to set up a meeting with a smaller group of people, get them bought in, right? And then if you want to set up a larger one, at least you've got a core of people that are sort of fighting your corner, and then they will say, oh, actually, yeah, this is going to be relevant, we should come. So I think from a media owner perspective, you just have to be tactical. You have to be tactical, and you have to understand that these people on the other end are super stressed. They're super busy. They have people coming in all the time that are wanting to speak to them. And you have to just ensure that your whatever strategy, if you want to call it that, is respectful of their time, and understand that they're not going to bend over and give you everything you need on a whim. You have to show that value.
So
what a phrase.
For those in agency that just need a reminder on how to work with media owners, remember your manners. If you're going to decline a meeting, do it in advance and try and get these meetings in face-to-face as opposed to remote, because you'll probably learn more and everyone will benefit more from an in-person meeting.
And the most important one is don't cancel a lunch at the last minute. That's just the worst. When you're like, I'm going to go out for a nice lunch to a nice place, and then they're like, no.
And there's often a charge if you cancel so late as well. Yeah. So very, very, very jarring.
I just go on my own and order three meals.
But yeah.
You're smart as hell, Harry. You're smart as hell.
Mate, look at this guy. There's no way he's ordering three meals. That's, you know.
Ring, ring. Ring, ring. Hello, Media and On. Okay, Media and On. So we have three today. First one, new year, new me, ! I work in Central and I was struggling to find time during the working week to hit some of my goals for the new year, including getting to the gym more often. I bit the bullet and signed up for a gym closer to the office. Why are London gyms so expensive?
Agreed.
So I could get a gym session out of the way straight after work rather than after a 40-minute commute home. I still get a bit of gym anxiety because I'm pretty new to all of it. And unfortunately, it looks like everyone else has had the same idea about signing up to this gym. In my first week of going, I've seen 7 people from the office and I find it absolutely mortifying. Any advice for how to get over this or solutions to working out away from the office?
That's a tough one because I think when you go to the gym, you do just kind of want to switch off and relax. I think a big part, certainly for me, a big part of going to the gym is the mental aspect of it. Being able to separate yourself. And if there's 7 people there, that's...
That you know as well.
Yeah, yeah. That's. I mean, are you chatting to them? Are you sort of giving them the little nod and carrying on with your workout? But ultimately, just change gym.
Nah. Like, no, nah, there's a much easier solution.
Okay.
Bag of disguises. I tell you what, fake nose.
Yeah.
Different
glasses.
Wig, glasses.
What, if you're running on the treadmill? At
baseball cap down.
They're not going to let you in. You'll look nothing like your ID, would you? You'd have to get 7 different gym memberships.
Yeah, I mean, you go into like the changing room, change up your disguise.
Then that looks coat. Even worse, because then it looks like you're always in the changing room but never in the gym, and that's suspicious.
Yeah.
I'm straight up, I'm going to ignore the hell out of you. I'm sorry. We're all here for our own purposes. Sorry, not you in the room.
Oh,
the
right.
Gym.
I was like, wow.
Yeah, Jack was very upset.
I was like, okay, I was joking, but that was quite mean.
Nah, if I see you in the gym, especially if we're not close like that, I'm not going to say a word. I'm just going to keep it kicking, keep it moving, keep lifting heavy and pretend I never saw you or met you or know your name.
There you go. Do not approach.
Or go to a gym nearer to your house before work.
Not everyone's a morning working out person.
I wasn't for years. And then I discovered it. And now I'm like, but then also I've left evening beers as much behind. So maybe... bit less beer in the evening, a bit more gym in the morning. Maybe that could help you. I don't know.
First of all, to this person, totally understand and feel your pain there because it is a bit awkward. But just run your own race. Ignore everyone, like Bea said, and don't let it impact your well-being and fitness journey.
Love. Okay, number two. I've been snubbed for a promotion. Despite being in my role longer, with more experience and better results, the role was given to somebody else. I don't know how to best address this with my manager, as I'm feeling really angry with the situation, but I don't really see where my career progression can go without this opportunity.
Well, you're missing something. There's a third variable in that equation. Because if you've been there longer and you're getting better results, there's something else.
There must be.
You need to figure out what that
is. There must be, because there's no way. Because if you literally are doing your job better, why would they hire that person?
You need some, what is it, what they call it, radical candor.
From your,
maybe it's not your boss who did it, but whoever the hiring manager was, you're going to need to swallow your pride big time and say, look, this is the way I see it. I've been here longer. My results are better. I've got a blind spot, clearly, that's meant that you've chosen this other person. What is that? And then you're going to have to strap on your steel pants and just, like, deal with what comes, because there's probably going to be something that you've completely missed.
Mm. Yeah, absolutely.
I agree. I think I had this one time many years ago, and I think I was so angry. I just left and bought a one-way ticket to Peru and just left.
Well, there we go, guys. Was it, it is.
So you was could it, do that.
Was it because you snubbed someone in the gym?
Nah.
No hiring manager.
If only, but nah. Like, it was this kind of similar kind of situation where I really believed that the role was going to me, and we had even discussed it a little bit that I was going to be. It was going to be a step up for me, and it was like, "Are you ready?" And I was like, "Yeah, I'm ready." And then, like, before you know it, no more discussion, and someone else has been brought over. And I was like, oh, so remember when you said you was going to promote me? Who's this?
You got snaked.
Words are wind. Until you get
sign that contract.
Yeah, until there's ink on paper, exactly, as they say.
First of all, sorry to hear that, because that is crappy news.
It does suck.
It sounds to me like if it was the hiring manager that made this decision, then perhaps there's a broader agenda at play, i.e. they've got ideas about how they're changing the overall structure of the team. That means that they need someone with a different skill set, and they just haven't been transparent with you on that. That could be a reason. like Jack said, there's obviously elements that play that you're not aware of, but you know your worth. If you are kind of clear and know in your heart of hearts, once you've kind of, you know, investigated further, that there is nothing else, and you take control of your own destiny and either look out elsewhere or explore other avenues, because the worst thing to do is kind of sit there and fester on that, because sometimes that can really impact your own morale and also attitude to work, and that also gets noticed.
Yeah, so we head to Peru.
Yeah,
I will say that was a long time ago, and to everyone's point, it was essentially something like that that had happened. There was a bit of a shift in the structure of the agency. I was much more junior, so they didn't have to tell me shit, to be fair. Mm. But I personally would have appreciated just being like, oh, actually, we're having to change up the structure. So to all the points, I think just go and ask the question,
yeah,
and they're going to have to tell you something or other.
Yeah, find out and fix it or move.
Before we get kicked out of here, there is one last one.
Okay.
Ooh.
So this one says, you're always asking for our media anons. Is there anything that you want to get off your chests? I mean, it's not very anon from us.
Yeah, not particularly anon, is it?
But I like that you're asking. No one else asked about us, so thank you.
I mean, that's nice.
I'm invoking the Fifth Amendment there. I'm not self-incriminating there.
There's a lot of things.
Oh, wow.
I mean, I
feel like we got a little bit of it earlier with the Lunch and Learn chat about the meetings.
Yes, well, that one Lunch and Learns, don't like.
Mm.
Forget them. Don't invite me to one because I'm not going.
Wow.
Second of all, bloody timesheets.
Oh.
And I tell you, obviously I understand the purpose of timesheets. What I don't understand is that you can't submit them in advance. But if, for example, you've got a day off on the Friday and you can't submit them, then you get agged about it the week later saying you haven't submitted the timesheets.
That is AI.
And I'm like, I know I haven't submitted it because I couldn't submit it when I did it in advance on a Friday, because it wouldn't let me submit that day because I was doing it too early.
Furious.
So I've got the perfect advice for you here, mate.
Go on.
Stop worrying about it. they can nag you. What are they going to do?
We're talking about AI all the time, but AI really could be helping us here. Like, why is there not a thing that's on my laptop that's literally like, oh, are you typing about this client for ages? Then you're doing that. Oh, your diary said that you blocked out to do this client. Straight into the timesheets. AI, do something, please.
Agreed.
Yeah, I'm with you on that one.
Cool. Well, thank you for asking us. The rest of us will also be pleading the fifth.
Anyway, that wraps up today's episode. If you like what you heard, like and subscribe and keep submitting media anons. We love to hear your goss. Bye.